is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial. You're listening to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108.
Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Sitting here with some guests this morning, and we're going to be talking about the Waianae Sustainable Community Plan. And I have my guests this morning is Marty Townsend, Alice Greenwood, and Lucy Kay, and they're from some of the community out there in Waianae, dealing with the Waianae Sustainable Community Plan. And there's some new developments going on, and the city council is going to be hearing this. When is it? November 6th and November 2nd. And what is, we're trying to get some technical stuff here going. So, Lucy, when is this the Sustainable Community Plan going to be heard?
We understand it's set for November 2nd, which is a Wednesday at 1 o'clock at the Kapolei Hale ground floor conference meeting room.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, Alice, we're the last on the agenda, fourth item on the agenda, and it will be a hearing that will accept public testimony.
And Marty, can you give us a little info on what is going on, and we'll get and talk about the details of this monster.
The Waianae community, the Waianae Sustainable Community Plan, is an important document because it decides. It directs what development is allowed in Waianae, along the Waianae coast. Every community has its own community plan. And the Waianae community has worked for many years to develop this plan. And unfortunately, when the final draft of the plan came out of the city, the Department of Permitting and Planning, there were significant changes to the plan, such that now residents of Waianae are saying that this plan doesn't even remotely reflect the plan that they had put out. The doesn't reflect their vision for the future of Waianae. And so we're witnessing some considerable opposition to this plan, and we can see, you know, quite a few developer-driven initiatives playing out in the Waianae plan. Attempts to urbanize farmland, attempts to undermine the agricultural heritage of Waianae. And so there's a mounting opposition, both from Waianae residents as well as residents from around Oahu who want to support keeping Waianae country. And so, in part of that effort is we are inviting people to attend the city council hearing on November 2nd at about 1 p.m. in Kapolei Hale. And they will be deciding, this is the second reading for the Waianae community plan. So this is a major hearing in the process. And the basic ask is to either send the plan back for further community consultation and consensus, or at least remove those aspects of the plan that lack community consensus. And people have been very vocal about those aspects of the plan that don't reflect their vision.
Mm-hmm. And Alice, you are involved from a community standpoint of seniors, and what are some of your concerns?
A lot of my concerns is to make like a regional park. Mm-hmm. And there's no community consensus to it. It was something that was on the spur of the moment, and they just turned around and put it on. I guess it's the city council, it's the planning department that just put it on in the back, mm-hmm. the draft plan.
There was no city, no community consensus on it, no voice.
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing is to turn around and put a light industrial park and says that, oh, it's not going to impact us. With the traffic that we have every day and what's happening to our community, it's getting outrageous. You know, if you live in Makaha, sometimes take you at the boundary of Waianae 2.5 hours to 3 hours to get home.
Mm-hmm.
And then the trucks that will impact our children as they're walking on the streets, our community as they're trying to cross the street to go into the shopping center. You know, all of this is drastically affecting our community, and we need a voice. We need to say enough is enough. Think about us, too. Everybody said we need jobs. What kind of jobs? Name the jobs. Is it really for us, or is it only for a special selected people,
mm-hmm.
or a selected crew? And these are the things that we're very, very concerned about. Many times, even with Aulani, even with the other resource they have out there, our people isn't put to work.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned regional park. Which park and what location are you speaking about?
It's the one that's across from TBT, mm-hmm. and it was generated by the neighborhood board, and one day they listened to your radio station, and they said, let's get together and say we need a regional park, and it's got to be over there at Crossman PVT.
And is this consistent with the sustainable communities plan?
It wasn't even discussed with the among the community.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a spur of the moment.
And it was the neighborhood board who,
yes,
with some of the politics or in it, I guess, behind it.
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. And I was called the day that I remember very well. It was during your program.
Mm-hmm.
And I was called and said, hey, Alice, you know, we got to stand firm. We got to turn around. I know they want to get rid of PVT, but the neighborhood board had ample time, many, many times,
mm-hmm.
to turn around and put a stoppage to it. But they didn't do anything, because they were collecting the benefits of the of PVT.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden it's impacting them. They're saying, oh, what about our health and issues? They never thought of it in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, just to add to what Auntie Alice just said, for people who don't know, PVT is the only commercial and construction demolition waste landfill in Hawaii. So whenever anything gets torn down, a house, a building, roads, that material is deposited in the PVT landfill. And PVT owns the property that now has the regional district park symbol on it. And PVT itself has said that the property that they're currently using has only about 5 years left of capacity on it, and they are looking to find ways to expand that capacity. I think it's important to note that it's right near a residential district, Coral Sands, and people live, their back doors open up into PVT. There's considerable dust issues and health problems of those people who live next door to the PVT landfill. And while we agree that, parks are a good thing and Waianae needs more parks, we really have to look at the planning and whether it's wise to put a park in that location, given the access issues, the major thoroughfare there, the trucks, the massive amount of trucks. Auntie Alice, you and Auntie Pat counted how many trucks go by over there?
There was over 100.
Made.
Oh, yeah, I know there was over 100 per hour that passed through. And then the vehicles and everything, too, that was shocking. Like I said, right there is a very busy area. It has the bus stop across the street. And people, even our children, stop at the bus stop and cross the street. So you're having all these trucks, over 100 of them, coming through. And it's the most busiest section that you could ever think of, and yet we don't have no protection.
Now, clarify, you say 100 trucks. Where are specifically are you standing when you're counting them?
We're by, it's on the NED Road by McDonald's.
Okay.
Yeah.
There, and you're counting the Farrington, or are you?
We're counting both ways.
Oh, okay.
You know, Farrington, because we don't only have trucks that are going up towards NED Road. We have trucks that are going into the community, too.
Right. I mean, the reason I can clarify that, it sounds like 100 trucks per hour going by PVT or going into PVT or going, no, it's making sure,
yeah,
that.
And I need to clarify also, during the time frame that we're counting, it's not the most busiest time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I think the point is that there are 100, major industrial trucks going past the intersection that would be used for ingress and egress of the regional park.
Mm-hmm.
And it just demonstrates that's one piece of evidence that demonstrates a lack of planning around the development of this park idea. And just to show how strongly people feel about it, and I mean it sarcastically because they don't, as soon as it became controversial and PBT began to react to having a park symbol on their property, the support for the regional park at the neighborhood board level completely evaporated. And they have changed their position since the filing of a lawsuit by PBT and are no longer in support of a regional park in that area.
Now, what I've spoken with PBT on this because I had some questions. Someone said the same thing. And what I came up with was PBT is happy to put a park there if they were properly compensated, number one. But it was the manner and fashion in which, and we covered it on the show, that it was politics. It was Mufi Hanneman and the other and his goons who went out there and Patty Teruya, who was pushing this thing and created this. And working the city council, she did so well. So I'm under the impression and understanding that if PBT was approached in a legal fashion and compensating them properly, who wouldn't sell it to the city? But it didn't happen that way. It was the PIM was put on. It was never considered. The funding was never allocated. Was it never nothing? It was a hijacking of the system. And so that's the real truth about this, is that hopefully, it's unfortunate. People don't go to jail in this town for doing things like that. But it's a major crime. It's white-collar crime perpetrated and effectively done for a while by Hanneman, Mufi Hanneman, and his administrators in the parks and all those people. Patty Teruya, and I think that PBT did what they had to do, file a lawsuit, you know.
Yes, and another thing about that situation is that, you know, it divided our community because the way Mufi Hanneman says, if you don't okay it, guess where the next landfill will be at?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Knowing that they were ready to close down our one and only. So we were really threatened by the whole thing. And our children, even at the high school, was agreeing to the situation that says, yes, that's what we need. We need a regional park over there. Mm-hmm. Not knowing that, there was the threat of, if you don't do what I say, I will bring the landfill to your area.
Now, the reason I want to mention that, and I don't want to treat this subject with, give it too much time, but the reason I thought this would be a good segue, a good example to show why you do have concerns, if they are willing to do this with PBT's land or Nanakuli B to make a park illegally and take their land, what do you have to watch for in the sustainable community plan? What trickery are you going to be faced with, right?
Exactly. A correlation to that, in conjunction with the congestion issues that we were just talking about in terms of the regional park, we have the light industrial park proposed for the tropic land property, which we affectionately refer to as the purple spot, because on the planning map, in the sea of green that is the Lululei Agricultural District, the city is proposing a gigantic 100-acre purple-colored industrial park.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an issue that having an industrial park back up in the mountains of Lululei would add to the congestion we just talked about. I mean, in their EIS, they confess that 500 trucks an hour would go in and out of their industrial park. And at this point, if the plan were to go forward, they don't have access to the Naval Road. So they would be using the country road of Hakimo Road in order to get those major industrial trucks up and down the mountain. And, it's a country road, no sidewalk, sometimes one lane, blind turns, that kind of thing, right? So really add to the congestion. And I think it just goes to show, that, again, the lack of planning and probably the fact that they don't actually want to do an industrial park there. They just want to make some money. You talk about conspiracy theories, right, and whatever's going on. It's my belief that they actually had inside information from the city from Woofie, that they were going to, that the city was planning to buy a lot of the land back there in 2006. And so these developers, shall I name them?
Yeah,
Mike Nakoba, Tom Inamoto, and Clyde Kaneshiro, Clyde Kaneshiro of Huntwood Disposal, they purchased this property at dirt cheap prices and then initiated the process to change the land designation. And just by changing the designation of the land from agriculture to urban would increase the value of the property. So we could flip it and then sell that land for a profit. I mean, they don't care what happens to that property, what gets built on it, all the promises they're making about who would build and what would be built, they're not going to have anything to do with that. So whatever promises you extract from tropic land as an entity would probably be irrelevant because they're not going to be in the picture when things actually start getting built on an urbanized land.
And to add to that, Marty, I recall in their EIS, their own consultant who did their market study indicated that actually that property is not it's really not an attractive place for people who do industrial type businesses because it really doesn't deliver on the kind of attributes that one would be looking for if you were going to invest in an industrial property, because what you're looking for is easy access or close access to the major thoroughfares, so you can get to your suppliers or to your market with greater efficiency and reduced costs. And those things are totally absent when you look at the siting of this particular industrial park. And so their consultant basically said in order to get people interested in purchasing and moving their business out there, they actually have to incentivize the buyer to come. So the other piece was that lead us to conclude that maybe this was really a flip was when the project manager himself said they had no experience ever doing any kind of industrial park development as developers, and that when they bought the land sometime in December 2006, it was because they had information that the city was in discussion with the Navy to purchase that private Navy road, which goes right up to the property. And so they plunked their money down, and time passed, maybe about a year or so, and the city, after doing their analysis, determined that it was beyond what they could afford, and so dropped the option to purchase. And here was the developers sitting there with this $3 million purchase on their hand with no way to get to it. And I thought it was very interesting that when they did their EIS, they never once had their traffic engineer do an analysis of what it would take to go up the Hakima Road. They totally ignored that and spent their entire funds financing this engineer to look at going up NAD when they actually had no legal right to go up that road. I thought that was quite presumptuous on their part, indicating that perhaps they have sufficient influence within city to effectuate that kind of conclusion for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just to drive that point home, the Land Use Commission already has passed judgment on this proposal, the Purple Spot Industrial Park proposal, and they said no. And one of the things, they cited many reasons for saying no. One of them was the legal access issue in terms of you cannot use Hakima Road for this kind of industrial activity, and they don't have a legal right to use the Naval Road. In addition, they cited the lack of an economic justification. And basically, the developers on the economist changed the numbers and said, if we went with the city's numbers, there wouldn't be a justification for this proposal. So we're going to double the city's numbers, projections on the economic forecast for the need for industrial land.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, literally cooked the books in order to create economic justification. The Land Use Commission saw through that and voted against the proposal. And that's part of the reason why I'm so strongly opposed to having the purple spot in the Waianae plan, is because if the Land Use Commission said, no, it's not a good idea, then and we still go forward with the Waianae plan having the purple spot in there, then it just opens it up for developers. It's like an invitation to developers telling them, yes, this land is appropriate for industrial development,
mm-hmm.
when in reality it's not.
Yeah. Let me see if I can offer some background and insight. While I don't know all the nuts and bolts of it, but first of all, Clyde Connoisseur is involved in the tropical. Now, the public may not know this, and I've mentioned it in a couple of years back on the show, that Mufi Hanneman actually worked for Clyde Connoisseur. Mufi Hanneman lobbied, and I've sent Mufi Hanneman a list of questions, and I'll share those questions with the listeners. See, Hanneman has a style of, I don't recognize you, then therefore you don't exist. And he never responded. And I've been informed directly by a couple of legislators, and one in particular that told me that they even met at Kincaid's restaurant with Clyde Connoisseur, and that Mufi was advocating for Clyde for the Kunir, the landfill that was, you understand, along with Bob Iwana. So that's number one. Number two, to show you the willingness on Hanneman's part to and why we should be concerned, and I'm glad you guys are advocating, and the listeners or your neighbors out there probably wouldn't understand this, but you're bringing it to the table and trying to bring some transparency. The reality is he illegally proposed to and initiate an action to take over the park. Take someone's land. Nanakuli B belongs to PVT. Take their land illegally. Then he proceed, and this is to let the listeners know just how untrustworthy or we should be or untrusting of this gentleman named Mufi Hanneman. And that is, why would you propose a park on one hand and at the doorsteps of a industrial park that's going to be inviting more people, more dust, more trouble, more chemicals, more fumes, and situate a park in one place and situate a industrial site in the other?
Right.
All while trying to manipulate the whole process, both at Tropical, and then having Andrew Jamila sitting on that board taking grants from Mufi Hanneman. So, folks, I'm not into, parks and recreation, but I'm hoping that when this gentleman step up at the plate and run for Congress, as he's already declared, we hit a home run and knock him out of the park, and the ball is lost. We don't have to deal with him again. It's over. The cover has to come off of this guy's ball. This is serious. And now we're engaged. The city is going to have to pay for this lawsuit that Mufi Hanneman at the parks. Mm-hmm. And I'm told that they've been fighting, and the city council have been fighting. They don't want Mufi to be deposed or interviewed or by the opposing side and what have you. So who lose most? It's the citizens out there. He divided the community, mm-hmm. and he purposely, they set up the Nanakuli B and separated those neighborhood boards mm-hmm. as part of this grand conspiracy. Mm-hmm. The guy is sharp but as rusty as a nail. Mm-hmm. And so that's what it's about.
And talking about the neighborhood board, again, Nanakuli, they call it Nanakuli / Pine Ely. Neighborhood board is getting involved again with the industrial park because the idea of $1 million package deal.
Yeah.
And then they turn around and says, it's they're going to have a church, they're going to have a media center, they're going to have a processing for the farm, and then when you look at the EIS, this is they have 12 trucking companies.
Who's going to be the priest? Duke Iona, Gary Okino, mm-hmm. and I mean the priest is at the church. No, I'm just being facetious.
No, but again, the neighborhood board is involved, and they make a special resolution. And hey, the neighborhood board isn't listening to the community.
Well, also, how about separation of church and state? How can the government legislate and negotiate on behalf of the community and then insist that part of the deal is that we'll build a church?
Well, I actually question even the legality for the neighborhood board to be engaged in such an agreement, because there is such a practice called the community agreement. It's a community benefit agreement. That's what the concept is called. And it's a concept that was introduced when they developed Staples in L.A. And the idea was, how do we guarantee as developers the
support of the neighborhood for their proposed development. So this idea of engaging the community prior to getting all the permit approvals seems strategically smart. So this particular unilateral agreement, Alice, you're talking about, kind of like is in that vein. But where it departs is that the community benefits typically are not negotiated by government type organizations. It's usually nonpartisan citizens. And when you look at the benefits, it's about benefits accruing to the people who take the highest risk, who get the most benefit. So when you look and if you analyze the unilateral agreement that the board supported through their resolution, you don't see any of those things reflected. There's no identification of who are the ones in that community along Tropic Land MV that's taking the biggest risk. They don't mean the farmers, but they talk about who gets the benefits. And if you look at who the beneficiaries are, they're far from that spot. When you talk about the church, mm-hmm. It's a particular church, a particular minister. And his name is on that unilateral agreement. In fact, he was chair of the Planning and Zoning Committee that recommended to the Neighborhood Board approval and support for that initiative called Tropic Land.
Amen, sister. You tell us.
And then when it went to the media center, that too accrued to someone who was an early emissary, ambassador, on behalf of the proposed Tropic Land project.
Hey, wait, Auntie, so how much, so this is not the first time this property has been involved in a unilateral community benefits package, yeah?
No, it's not, and in fact, it's kind of an insult to our community. You know, back in the late 80s, a company from Japan purchased the land from the McCandless family, and proposed to turn that into a golf course. They were able to get the zoning from the city because they weren't changing the district boundaries, so they didn't have to go to the state. But they got the approval to do the golf course. And of course, the community was, you know, concerned about it. So a unilateral agreement was made, but this is the insulting part of it. The company in Japan offered the community $2 million to offset and mitigate their intrusion into this ag land, which is going to be open space, it's going to be nicely mowed and lawn and green and very low impact on the roadway and the community. Mm-hmm. $2 million. Now come these guys here, local guys, mm-hmm. and they come and they short sell us with something more toxic, more intrusive, more damaging to the character of the landscape. And they offered Nana Kuli Miley Board what? $1 million? Something's wrong here. You know, this, yeah, it's an insult to the community.
Mm-hmm. I think the golf course, though, is a good lesson in how strongly the community feels about protecting their ag heritage, their agricultural heritage. And the community really came out strongly opposed to the golf course. It was not consistent with the food-producing heritage of Waianae. Waianae, for a long time, since old times, has been a breadbasket for Oahu. And there are great stories about, you know, Hiaka coming, you know, on her travels, going through Lulele Valley, and the community being able to provide these amazing meals for her on, you know, on a day's notice kind of thing. And that's the only, you know, those kind of stories can only be accomplished if that place is actually very abundant, already fertile. You know, there's great stories about the Valky Forest up there, and actually this property that Tropic Land is being proposed for, we think is actually the birthplace of the demigod Maui, just from the historical records.
You're listening to the Carol Cox Show. My guest is Lucy Gay, Marty Townsend, Alice Greenwood, and we're talking the Waianae Sustainable Community Plan. 524-1080 if you'd like to call in. Or you can pick this up at carol@carolcox.com, carolcox.com. But anyway, thank God for, or whomever, for the three of you and others in your group, because I know from afar, I've been up there and dealt with it, and there's such a grand conspiracy, and it's all about getting the little guy a benefit. But the little guy is never consulted. The little guy is avoided. And the little guy has to put money that he don't have and go and get on the bus or get in the car and drive to compete and compete against the planning commission, compete against the city, corporation council, the mayor, and everybody involved. Yet they're doing it for the community.
Yeah.
You see, that's...
Well, that's why we're putting the call out and asking the actual community, those little guys that you're talking about, to actually come out and speak for themselves. So November 2nd, 1 p.m., Kapolei Hale is the time to show up and make your voice heard.
Kapolei Hale in Kapolei, so they made it half the distance. They don't have to drive in the town like they used to do the old trick. Let's schedule it in Hilo to discuss issues in Haleiwa. You know, so at least they're coming around. But where can people write? Who should they write? There are city council. If they, who should they throw words at and comments in?
I think it's important for all the council members to hear from their constituents that they support keeping the country country, and that includes Waianae.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a major food security issue for Oahu. That if we are going to industrialize fertile farmland in this day and age, we're undermining ourselves in the long term because we're harming our ability to provide food for ourselves. And there are quite a few council members, I think, who feel this concern, you know, who this resonates with them, that they want to have a secure food future for Hawaii. And so contact your council members directly. If you want to sign our petition, we have a petition in support of a truly sustainable Waianae, and you can get that at www.kahea.org. That's kahea.org. And if you can just search for Waianae, and the petition will come up, and you can sign it online, and we'll be delivering the petition on November 2nd.
So the mantra is keep the country country and keep the city honest.
Yeah, and we can keep the city on focus and on target because, you know, the city has... they're governed by a general plan, which is, you know, superseded by the state plan. And these plans reflect the broad thinking of the community of residents here in our state as to how we would want to live well in our place.
Mm-hmm.
And if you examine the city plan, it's very clear where they demarcate growth shall occur and where it shall not occur. And they're very clear in saying that we need to focus our growth in the urban core and the secondary urban core, and to keep those places outside of that core in agriculture for the sheer purpose that Marty talked about. We got to eat. And yet, and so if we look at their plan, clearly tropic land is not in the growth boundary area. It never was, but it is now proposed by those who are sitting in the city DPP.
Just to be clear, one of the problems with the Waianae plan is that it proposes to expand the urban growth boundary for Waianae when it's not supposed to be.
You have a phone call. Caller, you got a comment or question?
Good morning, Carol. Hi. I would like to know regards to in Makaha, there was a controversy a couple of years ago regards to landfill with hazardous material, and there was a controversy, and the person, I believe, got indicted. I would like to know the status of the property. It's quite large acres of land. Could anybody, as a listener, could grant me the status as to what is happening to that property? Because one source told me that it was going to go to donations to nonprofit. Mm-hmm. I have heard various things, but I don't know the truth of where that land stands and where it stands today. Please.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
May I hang up and listen to see if someone can give me the information?
Where is the property located?
Well, this is it. I'm not quite exactly sure, but since in your field, Carol, that I assume that since you're speaking of Waianae, if there was a property that had a landfill of a hazardous waste and there was an indictment regards to the person who owned the property, and I would like to know what the status of that property is.
Okay, thank
today.
You. All right.
Thank you.
Couldn't get the property. Where's the property?
In Makaha.
There's several up there. I don't know specifically what she's... There was one that is by Valley Road, Waianae Valley Road, right by... I'm assuming it's Swift. But what about that one?
Yeah, I'm sorry, caller. I could not hear your question, but just trying to get a sense of it. So the concern is about specific properties where judgments were made against the landowner, and what is the status of the land today? Has it been cleaned up? So we have a couple ideas. I don't know what valley you were talking about, but in Waianae, there was the Swift property way up in at the end of the valley on Haleahi, where there were some very toxic PBC thing kind of stuff stored in container vans.
Mm-hmm.
They were cited, they were fined, and then they had to clean that up, and I think the guy went to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was another one on that same road at the very end of the road where a trucking company misrepresented their approval from the Department of, I believe,
mm-hmm.
Department of Hawaiian Home, and went beyond what he was authorized to do and used that as a private dumping place. And the concerned elders of Waianae checked up there and found it, and Hawaiian Home has removed some of the toxic stuff. They haven't completely finished remediating the site. The place is secure. There are other places, Carol, you're familiar with. And if you're talking about the trash man, that's in the Lualualei Valley area, up Hakimo Road. And the last time Alice was there, there's a new landowner. He runs an environmental cleanup company. It's his own company. And he is in the process of screening all of the soil, trying to clean it up, so that it can be returned to, you know, use.
Mm-hmm.
We have no idea of what that new landowner wants to do, but he's cleaning up on his own cost. And then the one where the DEA and all those guys went in not too long ago and couldn't find a whole bunch of stuff except some guns and stuff. I'm not up on what has occurred on that land.
I don't know the status. I don't want to speak.
I'm sorry, caller. I couldn't get your question clearly.
But the Waianae Sustainable Community Plan has been around. How long was it the original plan, this particular one we're dealing with now?
Well, this is the renewal. Every 5 years we have to update it. So we're behind by about 10 years, I think, now. When the city finally hired a consultant to help the community process this, it was around 2008. Somewhere around there, 7-8, and then we went into went to sleep for about a year, because it was under direction of the city. They were trying to align all of the community sustainable plans on format, and in some ways on content. And then it was resurrected. It emerged in 2010, and that's when we went, oh my God, we don't recognize this stuff.
Wow.
It's been, and I don't know if it's because, you know, people may have short memories.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that may have been one of their trickeries, you know.
I think it would be important to talk about how many community meetings and consultations the Waianae residents went through to develop the plan that went to DPP, just to demonstrate how offensive it is that there's such significant changes were made without consultation.
The Waianae Coast suffers, and I don't believe that it... I'm learning, guys. Initially, people say that the people in Waianae just don't get involved. They're apathetic. Really, it's not true. What it is that they're being manipulated. Today, you can go into a meeting, and you can participate in a neighborhood board meeting, and you don't know that the neighborhood board is just an arm of the administration who's already predisposed of doing something unethical and illegal. So over the years, what may have been appearing to be apathy is simply people just can't keep up. You have to have a legal mind and a willingness to abandon your job to fight on behalf of the community. And I'm hoping, I'm going to actually do a show, and I'm putting the things together that would show that community is suffering because of the manipulations. You take the Makaha issue recently. I'm of the opinion that was right from the start, manipulation. Remember, there was a $75 million tax break given to Jeff Stone, and they begged him and licked his feet to do something with it, and when he tried to give it back, they licked his hand. He said, no, you keep it. Where do you guys get the muscle to keep dealing with these issues?
I
know it's nothing to do with sustainability. What is sustainability? Tell me.
Well, I just want to say that, you know, from Kahan's perspective, you know, I've been working with this organization for about 6 years, and I do a lot of community organizing in other areas, and I got to say, Waianae residents are some of the most organized residents ever. People are involved, and it's really at the source of pride. People come out, they care, they take the time. I'm really quite impressed. So in spite of it all, you know, in spite of all of the trickery and the talking too much, we catch him. Yeah, you guys catch him, man. Smart. Nothing gets past you guys.
But now, so we've talked about tropical. We've talked about the proposal of Nanakuli B. We talked about all of that and the trickery. And now you got the Miley landfill that is, they are quite close to Mufi Hanuman. And I can tell you firsthand, you can quote me on this. I've talked about it on my show, and I've filed complaints. Yet another situation. So, does Rufy Hanuman want a park there while he know that the people would balk at it, like you say, whether done at Tropical just as a ruse? And then in turn, we say, no, we don't want it at Nanakuli B. Well, by the way, then there's Miley, so we'll put it at Miley because his friends stand and he stands to benefit.
Yeah.
So, here's the other part of this. With the sustainable community plan, and with the Nanakuli B and Tropical, remember he put in West Oahu Aggregate and Pine Ridge, who had the took over the old Kaiser cement plant. And what did they do? They decided by the stroke of a pen that only they didn't even have to have a public hearing, a public meeting. Remember that? And that is a major function up there, just, you know, concrete.
Yeah.
Pounding, rock grinding, trucking by the, and they didn't require them to even have a public hearing or even go before the neighborhood board. They penciled it in.
Yeah. So you can see how deep this history is on perpetrating these kinds of enterprises on a poor community, on a community that's primarily Native, and for whom lots of people downtown assume that they don't care, or they don't know, or we can keep them in the dark.
Right.
So this history with that Kaiser plant goes back prior to, to around statehood.
Mm-hmm.
When this is, if I'm not mistaken, the first case, real case of spot zoning
in 1961.
That's how that one came about. It was a spot zoning, and when we did the research with the city, it went through the city process to change the zoning. And then when it was finally published in the Honolulu Advertiser, they used the right, they changed, was it the number and the name? But it again, that, I'll come back, you know, it's another history. That's another time for another story. But that was spot zoning. And because it was zoned industrial two, from that point on in the late 50s, early 60s, that land can do a whole bunch of very noxious stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no need for the city, the state, Department of Health to consult with the community. So that's one.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing about it is, you know, how is it that Waianae is so so active in their own way in taking on these giants? And I think some of it has to come from the idea that Don't ever underestimate the people in Waianae.
Mm-hmm.
They will fool you. They may seem like they're not there, but they are there. And one of the ways that we've been able to assist people to feel comfortable in taking on the challenge is to use what they're already ma'a to.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, when somebody comes to you with a shiny dollar bill, you go, nah, for real, who's this? Really? Because what you're doing when you raise those questions is you're actually changing and shifting the issue from what they want to talk about to what you want to talk about. So that Miley Quarry issue, when it came up in 2005, I think it was, to convert that to a landfill, although the owner wanted to talk about his landfill, the concerned elder said, no, that's not our conversation. Talk to us about the ash that you've been burying on your land, toxic ash.
And the mayor and the state government allowed it, and the EPA allowed it, and yet environmental justice. That's why, you know, I have to, on one hand, it's a mixed emotion. The EPA arresting people, crackheads on mopeds, and yet they are sitting and purposely allowing people to take ash from AES, highly laden with arsenic, to put it in an online landfill. Well, it wasn't a landfill, which was clearly the groundwater in a coral setting, a substrate. So you have the tidal exchange and influences.
Yeah.
So.
And that permit, Carol, you know, to do that was granted by the Department of Health.
Mm-hmm.
And that type of permit provides no provision in the regulation for community consultation, nor even to inform the community of what that permit will be doing. So thanks to you, the community was alerted to that. And I don't think they're doing any more ash landfill.
No more ash, but they lied. They told me that they weren't doing it. Then we confirmed that they were, and we documented the trucks. And then they said, well, okay, well, what we're really doing is doing a risk assessment. So they gave it to Hazardous and Emergency Response to do the risk assessment, and you might as well go there and say, tell me a lie today, and I'll come back tomorrow for another lie. That's all you get in the here office. But
so that's what they told you. What they told us was, well, you know, we said you're actually landfilling this ash because you're burying it, and there's no future other use for it.
Right.
And they said, no, we're recycling. In fact, that was the name of the permit. So then they, after they, you know, their hands are caught, then they take the ash to PVT. And now they're saying, oh, we're recycling it because it has a new use. It's now a cover, end of the day cover. So it's a little bit more legitimate. But it just goes to show how agile these people are in with words.
Well, if you'd like to join me in the next hour for however long you want to, I don't know. I know you have to go.
Yeah.
And if you want to stay for clear up a few points or add more. But we'll be back shortly, and this is the Carol Cox Show, and I'll see you shortly. Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, the second half. Sitting here talking with Marty Townsend and Alice Greenwood. Lucy Gay was with us earlier, and we were talking the Y&I Sustainable Community Plan and some of the goings-on and trying to encourage the community out there and anyone else, not just necessarily the Y&I community. It affects us all because a great many of us drive out to Yokohama Bay and have relatives and friends and recreate out there and fish, and so we all are impacted. And this brings me to a comparison. You know, there was the Envision Laie and how it was handled and some serious questions there with David Tenoy and the underhanded behavior and what goes on. And Luffy Hanneman has a real interest in that area too. So this isn't about Mufi Hanneman. It is about the footprint that he leaves and the stench that he leaves, where we the public got to fend for ourselves while he and others seem to manipulate as we go along one trick after the other. But anyway, Marty, you had a couple more points you wanted that we weren't able to cover.
We were just talking about how the Y&I plan as it came out of the Department of Planning and Permitting does not reflect the community's vision for Y&I.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's perhaps most obvious in the vision statement in the current draft, the 2010 draft of the plan, doesn't mention agriculture at all. Like, when you talk to people of the meetings that I went to for the Waianae plan, people always start with how much they love, you know, they talk about their childhood and their memories of the agricultural heritage of Waianae, how much they love that and they want to keep that for their kids, and that's not reflected in the plan itself. The vision statement does not talk about preserving farmland, preserving Waianae's ability to grow food. And it's unfortunate because it's that vision statement that really helps to drive future decision-making, or at least it's supposed to drive future decision-making about this area. And DPP, who's headed up by someone who, you know, got started under Muthi Hanuman's administration, David Tenoy, he's the head of DPP, although he's not a planner, and it's under his leadership that, you know, a lot of these conservations are taking place. He talked about Envision Laie. Same with Tropic Land and the Waianae Sustainable Community Plan. It's under his leadership that we're having this breakdown of the system.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I would add and remind the listeners is that while we point the fingers and we see the fingerprints and thumbprints of Muthi Hanuman on this and these activities, and he's left people in place, unfortunately, the new mayor, or should call him the tourist, Mr. Peter Carlisle, because I don't know if he's ever spent a full week in the city office. Well, I'll call him the tourist, Peter Carlisle. But the tourist has gone over, and he left in place all of Hanuman's people. All of them. So brought in a few hands, and then those that Hanuman didn't leave in, he then recruited them and have brought them back in. For example, one of the gentlemen at the Environmental Services Department was working, and Kenneth, I'll get the last name in a minute, but he was, this is the favors they give one another. He became the librarian's archivist. Kenneth Shimizu was a deputy of the Environmental Services branch. So he couldn't get a job anywhere, apparently. So Carlisle brought him in and put him in under Gail Haraguchi, who was his friend, Kenneth Shimizu's friend. And in turn, he worked there for a while. So we now don't have an archivist because they spent money training him and letting him stay. And then now Carlisle named him as the facilities maintenance deputy chief. So, folks, we're going to be voting in a year or so, and let's see if this tourist can have enough time to go and see the world, maybe join the army or something. But he hadn't been any good for these issues in the sustainable community. With he kept on Jamila. I don't know if Jamila is still on the planning board or what have you, commission.
No, I think he has since stepped down.
But again, Carlisle should have jumped on that and made a public statement. But this is for, I bring this up not to be mean-spirited, but to show if we don't incorporate this in our full thinking and understanding of what's going on, we can complain about they're not doing an EIS and impact studies, assessments, whatever, or holding a neighborhood board meeting properly. The problem is when we have people that are come aboard and keep the same staff, and Tenoy, he has to answer to no one. But the people that want the business. And here you are, you're an attorney. We, unfortunately, you have to struggle to try and fight these issues with little or no money as an attorney.
Yeah, it really comes down to the people who are affected by his decisions. I mean, once people start to find out what's going on, and that's part of what the Concerned Elders of Waianae does, is they do outreach and education, and we support them in that effort. And that's when you have the check on this sort of nepotism that you're talking about.
Right.
Auntie Alice, can you tell them the story about Hakima Road and how nobody knew about the industrial park?
As part of the Concerned Elders, what we did was we wanted to know if our community really knew what was happening about the industrial park. I mean, you talk about every single side road on Hakima Road, we knocked on doors, we spoke to the people, and they said they never knew what was happening. None of it. The whole entire road. And this is adjacent to where the Light Industrial Park is supposed to be at. The people of it signed our petition, In fact, we even make our petition special Hockey Monroe residents.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that supported the industrial park doesn't even live in our area. They come from the Nanakuli or the Makaha area. And I remember there was this one man, he signed the petition. He said, you know, Auntie Ellis, their petition never specified what we are telling him today. He says, I'm going to the LUC and tell them that. And he did.
Mm. And so just to make it clear, so this gentleman that you're talking about, he signed an early petition in support of jobs for Waianae, and it didn't make it clear in that petition that he signed that it meant putting an industrial park near the farms, family farms, along Hokimo Road. And so, it took a lot of courage for him, but he came down to the LUC first time he ever testified, and he told that story and made it clear that he wants to keep Waianae country for his kids.
Let me ask you, do you ever get the chance to offer your opinion? Because it seems like you're just having to play catch-up on behalf of the community and chase the issues like this. Is there anyone who has said to you, what do you folks want, without going into the Planning Commission and having to testify? Have anybody in the city sat down to speak with you or the elders or anyone?
Not that I can recall. All I know is that when it impacts us, then we find out and we do a study to make sure that is handled the correct way and our people are well aware of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we finally get ourselves together, of course the process has been moving, it's been going, and it hits all of our big business, all of our big businessmen. And then now we have to combat three combats: our business, our neighborhood board, and the city.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just concerned elders. For an instance, look what our neighborhood boards are doing. The 2010 Waianae Sustainable Plan hasn't passed. It's still in draft. In fact, November 2nd, we're having another meeting on it with the city council. But you look at the minutes at the neighborhood board, the committee minutes states like they're going to have a discussion on home businesses. This wasn't in the 2000 Waianae Sustainable Plan, but they're discussing it in process as they're having the committee meetings today. I called the commissioner and I asked him, how come they're putting in a topic that hasn't been approved yet?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, well, call up the person who's in charge of it and ask them why. And I said, no, that's your job, but that's your problem. And that you should be telling them to be aware that when they put these type of committees in action, it hasn't been approved.
So the Nanakuli Neighborhood Board is acting as if the draft 2000 plan that is so controversial is already been enacted and is starting to make decisions and establish committees as if the 2010 plan has been adopted as written. And it's fairly clear that there's going to be amendments to this plan, and it's just a matter of how close can those amendments get to what the community actually wants to see.
So does the Nanakuli Neighborhood Board see a benefit package along the way? Is there any plan or any benefit package built in, like $1 million in this one?
The benefits package, the benefits package for the Purple Spot, the Tropic Land Industrial Park, is intimately related to the Waianae Sustainable Community Plan. If they can't get that Purple Spot approved on the Waianae Sustainable Community Plan, it will be infinitely harder for the developers to flip that land and make some money and therefore give that $1 million benefits package to the Nanakuli Neighborhood Board.
And we know what happened to benefit packages. They end up buying boats and liposuction and pay their private rent with this money. That's all been the rent, paying rent with the nonprofit funds that got from the benefit package.
Oh, no, they said they were going to give it to the homeless phase two. I didn't even know there was a phase two. Yeah, I'm still considered a homeless person.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I don't know that there's a phase two. And they said they were going to put us to work on the farms.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were going to do, in phase two. But I've never had that ever approach. Mm-hmm. I've been with Street Beat. I've been around the people at the parks, and you know, to me, I'm very closely associated to the homeless, and yet not one of them told me that mm-hmm. they're in phase two.
Mm.
So where is that money going to go to? In fact, they still use it as to help the homeless. They end up applying for grants from the city mm-hmm. to help the homeless. So where is that money? I still see those people out there.
Mm.
Mm. Well, anything else or you want to, before you leave? I know you have to go.
I think it's just important to reiterate that it's direct public participation in the process that ensures that not only are the wishes of the community actually fulfilled, but that politicians, elected officials, and appointed officials are held accountable. There's a lot of pressure on these public officials, and if we don't answer that pressure, that negative pressure, the money, the politics, if we don't answer that with direct public participation, then the public will lose. And it's unfortunate this is the way the system is set up, but it is. And so I encourage people to show up at the city council. The meeting is on November 2nd. We think the Wine Night Community Plan will come up around 1 o'clock. You need to sign up ahead of time to testify. You can do it online or you can do it in person. We'll be meeting in Kapolei Hale, which is on Ulu'ohia Street. I think it's 1000 Ulu'ohia Street. It's basically the only large building there. And it's in the basement or the ground floor conference room.
Mm-hmm.
So please come and testify. Talk about your vision for Waianae and support those in Waianae who want to keep Waianae country.
Can I insert a little bit? Another thing is culturally it affects... It affects every single one of us.
Mm-hmm.
There is the story of the demigod Maui. You know, if anybody wishes to see him, the silhouette of him and everything, we're concerned elders are willing to have a tour to show people. The stories of our culture lives in each and every one of us, and
mm-hmm.
it's to be shared. It's not the property of a chosen few.
Mm-hmm.
So come out, let us know how you feel about it, and we'll share everything we need to do. And where this property is at, it's at the neck of the demigods Maui.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. If anyone's interested either in joining in one of the tours that the Concerned Elders of Waianae hosts, or in finding out more about the overall issues affecting Waianae in terms of the Waianae Sustainable Communities Plan, the industrial park, or the future landfill, they can contact me, Marty Townsend. My phone number is 808-524-8220, 524-8220, or you can email me at marti@kahea.org. That's kahea.org.
And before you go, I want to make an appeal or a plea to all the listeners out there and family members. I'm not giving an endorsement or anything. I'll just put my integrity and name behind Marty and her sincerity and her group's effort.
Thank you, Carol.
If you can afford anything, please donate to them in any small amount, $5, $10, $500, $5,000. It's still a tax write-off. You're a nonprofit organization, right?
Yes, we're 501c3.
And even... anything that you can do, and I don't want to say that they're destitute, which they are, but because if they keep chasing these guys and trying to understand and interpret what it is that they're presenting to us, we don't have any other entity that, you're an attorney, Marty is, and the organization is working hard, and then here you are, senior citizen, Kupuna, the elders, and it's all funded by what you guys can put together, and hopefully the listeners out there can appreciate this. I know everybody's on hard times now, but I'm passing the hat this morning and ask that please. And Marty, where can they send the donation, and who can they make the donation to?
Well, thank you very, very much for the endorsement. We really definitely appreciate it. We appreciate the work that you do as well, Carol. There's a lot that you find that no one else can find. To donate to Kahea.org, donate to Kahea, you can go either to our website. We have a secure online donation service, and that's at Kahea.org, K-A-H-E-A.org. You can also call us. Again, the phone number is 524-8220, or you can just send a check, and our mailing address is P.O. Box 37368, Honolulu 96837.
So supposedly 5,000 people sent you a dollar. Would that help?
That would cover our basic operating expenses.
What if 5,000 people sent $5?
Yeah, that would cover our basic operating expenses for several months.
Yeah, and then if they 5,000 people sent $10, imagine what you could do.
Yeah.
And then everybody, it's really not a lot of money. I know $10 is a lot in today's economy, but what we're going to benefit.
Mm.
So I'm asking you again, folks, please.
Yeah.
I'm passing the hat. I need some money.
We were talking amongst the board, and we figured out that if every one of our members, we have over 10,000 members, if every one of our members gave $1 a month, that's one iTunes song a month, we would have all of our basic operating expenses covered every month, and that would really free us up to be able to implement specific programs. It's been a struggle to maintain the staff's salaries and the office expenses, rent, and things of that nature. So, it doesn't really take much, but we do need something in order to keep going.
And, you know, on their behalf, I'd like to say, with Kahea, like with Marty, she took the time to come out to our community. She took the time to meet with our community. Her crew really works very, very hard.
Mm-hmm.
They work hand in hand with you. They don't leave you out in the dark and figure things out. No, they're there. Every day there's a phone call, there's an email, and in person, when you need to help, they're there to hold your hand.
And unfortunately, I recall on interviews with Marty where the baby's sitting on the lap. we're conducting an interview, and the chicken's in the background. but again, you're still here.
Mm.
It's a great sacrifice, and I'm just thinking what you're giving is immeasurable, and you can't place a value on it financially. But on the other hand, people should appreciate that. I wish they could see what it is you do, and it's a struggle, and you want to see the old civil rights movement. Marty is that person where. A bag of beans. I remember when with Fannie Lou Hamer, and when I was a kid, my mother, we would go to Ruvu where she lived and pick in the garden, and everybody would take food to her and exchange because she was busy doing the activism and going to Washington. And so I see a lot of that, and with this new age of Wall Street, mm-hmm. I'm asking again, if you can just send $10 to Kahea, they need it. We need it, and I assure you it'll be put to good use.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Aloha.
Aloha.
On the
Okay, welcome back to the second half of the Carol Cox Show. I appreciate all of you joining me and listening in, and I hope it encourages you and excite you and get you angered. We need to do something, folks. And I know a lot of you won't be found protesting or doing anything like that, but I see some light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a politician steering and guiding us either. And it's not a movie house. This is reality. We got our backs against the wall. We've given our trust, and where do we stop? And when do we start doing things? And the joy of having this show, and I loosely describe it as a show, is that, as you know, we broke the story about the governor's proclamation, his secret proclamation, right here. And when we started this show earlier and years back, we used to get calls, why don't you go to the big media? And I just want to remind all of you, being careful not to sound as a braggart, and I want you to listen carefully, but you see, that story has played out now for several months. And if you notice, the governor's ratings are tanking, lowest in the entire nation. You heard it right here on the Carol Cox Show. So we can do it. If you have a problem with believing in yourselves, apparently those of you that listen may have been part of that poll who expressed your concerns that you don't trust this governor. But I'll stop there with a big but, capitalized, underscored, and embracing, and say, while the governor has erred and terribly in his behavior, and he has problems that he and only he can fix, because he's part of a system that we have gladiators and emperors that represent us in this government here. And so while we might look at the governor, and I know that we exposed him and brought attention to this secret proclamation and what have you, suspending the environmental laws. We're proud of that. But I want to move on and say, look at the others. Look at our legislators. Where are the checks and balances? The executive branch, the governor, the legislative branch. Now, the legislators are now, I've heard and talked to a couple and some of their staff and others, and they are now wondering what can happen to help this governor renew his image or polish his image or get out of this funk. Here's the problem. It is not the governor's problem, you see. It is the legislators' problem, because they sat and did nothing. Each misstep that he makes, they have an obligation to say it does not benefit the people, it is not in the interest, the best interest of the people, so therefore we are in place for that purpose, to strike a balance. Don't wait until the governor tanks and then you panic and run and say, governor, you need to do this to do, this is why we've gotten too casual within our government, within our party, within our, the unions owns the politics here, and it's so bad that when in turn the governor makes a decision, they oppose him and they still go and support him. I'm sorry. It is just not the governor's ratings that we should be worried about. And I can see a great many of the Republicans are going, now it's our time. We can move in. No, because you are just as negative of an entity in this role. You haven't spoken out. You haven't challenged. You've done nothing. You've talked about God. You've talked about gays. You've talked about Obama and his birth certificate, and his mother was white and his daddy was black. And here we, in the nation, in these United States of America, we have a governor whose performance is lowest in any place. So that brings me, in a sarcastic or cynical way, to ask, why do we need to hold elections if we're last in education? If not last, we're struggling with Mississippi in education. We struggle to accept people in their private lives. We had to go and legislate, and we were, quote, liberals. for the last 40-some years. We have politicians that break the law, get involved in funeral homes and cemeteries and things, and they come out and say they're going to go to jail or they're going to be charged, and whatever happened to those things? So it's not the governor's role right now that we should be. We know where he is. He's a fixed target now. We know what he's about. He doesn't have the ability. He never had the ability. And in these big waters churning with the perfect storm, he came and talked about a canoe. That gives you, if you don't understand it, and that should have been the first warning right there. He didn't talk about the ship. You know, as a friend said, the Titanic should have been, but here they want to rearrange the deck chairs. It's bad. We do not need to send anyone to Washington, D.C. You realize in this state that infants, children that are seized or taken away from families that have been abusive or in abusive situations, end up dying and no accountability, and you have to struggle to get documents and information as if it's a secret. You can get right now, I can file a FOIA and get more on the nuclear weapons that we have here in this country than you can get on a child dying in the hands of a state health department or under the jurisdiction of a state health department. Peter Boy, all of those. So this is to the legislators and all the wannabes that want to go and represent us. What would you be representing us for? To make sure that we're continually placed last? That your only concern is that the governor now is tanking at 30%, while you should have been holding his feet to the fire and challenging him on. And I've, for example, sent the entire legislative body a letter asking them to intervene, take an action, call a hearing, do something about the illegal act, what I believe is an illegal and unethical act of having a secret proclamation to suspend environmental and other laws. And yet, they can't bring themselves and find enough integrity to speak to these issues and challenge this gentleman and raise the issues publicly. They've got to go behind the tent now and discuss, well, you know, what are we going to do about Neil? How are we going to do about Neil? Hey, don't worry about what we're going to do about Neil. Let's worry about what we're going to do about you and what are you going to do for us, legislators. That's the big problem. There's nothing to do. And my advice to the governor, and I'm sure he's always listening to me, one, start anew. Put away your attitude of arrogance and Mr. Abercrombie went to Washington. You're here back here amongst us now. We need to have a means of speaking to you. We need to have you speaking back to us. We don't need to find problems and then when we have the problem, we're met with a gatekeeper in Donald and De La Cruz who's standing there growling with nothing but emptiness. I would suggest openly and publicly, if you want to start anew and start cleaning shop, make Donald and De La Cruz number 5 of those that are jumping the ship or that you invited off the ship. Because if we, the general public, can't speak to her, then you will never know what it is that we want to speak to you about. And start paying greater attention in honoring the law. 92F, the Information Practices Act, or the Sunshine Act. I've exercised that, Governor, to your office, and still to date, you won't respond. You won't even acknowledge that you received the request for information. So when lobbyists and others have your ear and you're available and availing yourself to them at all times of the day or night, and you're boarding planes and going abroad with them, and you can't speak to the general public here, 30% is a high number at the pace and the rate that you're operating. It's predictable. I'm going to predict that at the current pace, if you operate this way and your legislative body on the other side of the aisle keep their thumbs you know where and sit there and go, well, Neil, what can we do? If they don't take you and corral your ways and remind you that is a system that relies on several entities and we arrive at decisions. And I'm telling you this as a citizen because while you might speak to the newspapers and while you might ignore and your people say that I, Carol Cox, and my show does not qualify as media, I would like to just pull your coattail and say, boy, just think if I was the media, if I'm able to uncover your secret ways and your secret strategies and what have you, it's a good thing that I'm not, quote, media or journalist. Because I could probably, your ratings would be, well, you probably wouldn't be in office. So I think when you belittle common citizens like myself, who simply have a right to expect good things from his or her government, and you fail to do that, and you insult us, and you walk away as if, I'm a non-existing entity. I don't live. I can't write. I can't speak. I can't phone. And then you find yourself reading the papers for the last 2 months, August, September, the last 2 months, you've been in the paper, not because any professional, quote, journalist brought this out, but right here on the Carol Cox Show. So that would be my tip to you. Start looking at the little man, the janitor that you walk by every morning who sweep and mop your floors will have some great advice for you. They're human beings. They know. They can tell you how it is a struggle to survive now in this economy. You can listen to them as well. You can listen to the garbage man. You can listen to the teachers. You can listen to people that you take your time and pick to support you and represent you, because if we can't be met with respect from your first line, then your programs will fail and the legislators will sit there. And I think right now the biggest thing that the legislators, they're not worried about how we can deliver better for the community or the people of the state. They're worried that the Republicans now have a chance to get their foot in the door and build their party representation and increase that. That's what they're worried about. They're not worried about you and me and the little kids that are taken in custody by the health department. They're not worried about Johnny who sits there with his stomach growling and trying to be educated and they raise a fee. They're not worried about that. They're worried that Neil, you as governor, has the lowest ranking in the United States and you're going to let the Republicans in. That's what they're worried about. Call or comment a question, please.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Carol.
Yes, good morning.
Aloha.
Hello.
Hey, I just wanted to remind your listeners of the great statement of recent by this Mayor Carlisle concerning the homeless situation, yeah? He was quoted as saying that we're better off having infestation of rats than having homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a statement of the number one on the county of Honolulu, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
The number one elected official, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, rats, you know, when you have a problem with rats, huh, you fumigate, yeah?
Right.
You know what I mean? So I just want to get a heads up.
And where was this statement made, and where can we find it?
This statement was made under the disappeared news.
Okay.
What's that? Ian Lynn.
On Larry Geller, I think.
And Larry Geller, yeah.
Yeah. You both are good sources.
You're right. And you know the thing about it is such a great statement. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? On it. I just want a heads up for the people, especially the people who are homeless, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Certainly there's a problem with rats, okay? Because rats live in the street.
Right.
Okay, they're in all of the sewer systems, yeah? Mm-hmm. Wherever there's a drainage, yeah?
Right.
You know, you're going to have rats.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, when you have people living on sidewalks and what have you, there's a harborage of things that the rats could eat, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
On it. So that is a problem, but that is not the answer, you know, coming from him, yeah?
Right.
So I want people to, as you are reiterating the fact, we have to remember what these people say and do, yeah? And they'll say the greatest things,
mm-hmm.
yeah? But to watch what they do.
Right.
Watch what we're doing. And that's all we can go by. And I hope the people realize this.
Mm-hmm.
And you keep it up, brother. We are listening.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Aloha, Filippo. Well, there are many, many stories that we break here, and it's not about breaking stories. I can tell you the difficult part about this is that it's like easy fruit picking. They are so reckless and insensitive to you, the voter, or you, the citizen, or you, the taxpayer. It really don't take much effort to find these things. It is so obvious. I mean, take for example the proclamation. You go on the website and you look and you know that, okay, I know that there has been approval and there's a rush to get money for Abercrombie's big donor and approve that, and you know that there's this thing is in work. So you go to the website and you look, and it's not there. Now, this is a governor's executive order. Imagine the rush to get jobs and boast about how you're improving the economy. Now, let me ask all of you. We know that he announced that he was going to Japan in the last week or whatever, 2 weeks ago. We know that. He announced that. It didn't mention that he was guaranteeing to bring jobs or money. There's no, it was going to be it's a junket. But we heard about that. Now, don't you think that a man who is in office, just got in office, wanted to impress upon all of you and impress you with his ability to go out and get money? Don't you think, and I shouldn't assume anything, and I'm that if the governor was able to confirm and seal the deal for some $250 million or $100 million, whatever it was, don't you think that a person whose administration was in its infancy would want to impress upon the people, see, I can bring home the bacon? Don't you think that that should have been published? Well, that is what clued me in. So, not being an expert journalist now, I don't know what that means anyway, but I'm thinking, wow, this gentleman don't want to boast. He boasts about everything else. Boasts about his trips. He even talked about Obama's birth certificate. Going to seal the deal for that. But he, in this economy, he didn't feel it important enough to tell us and disclose to us that he had brought home the bacon in the form of millions that would employ people, removing munitions. Well, that is what clued me on. And so looking at that website, I didn't see it. And then you go back and you see that it's up there because I've called around and others will call around inquiring about it. And then they insert it in. Yet, no announcement that he had brought home the bacon with the millions of dollars in this economy. I would be waving flags. I'd have Donald and Dale Cruz with a little bunny hat on and whining her kazoo. And we'd have a happy old good time because I just brought home the bacon. Why was that missing? And I offer this for some of you all that want to continue to, well, he didn't know or she didn't know and they didn't know. It was an oversight. No, it was a conspiracy. It was illegal. It's unethical. And we need to stop it. And the legislators that sit there and want to worry about why Neil is tanking, no, you need to get to doing some thinking. Don't worry about the tanking. Think about the thinking that you need to employ. You need to reassess. You need, as legislators, to hold this gentleman's feet to the fire. And when they're of questionable behavior, you can file with the Ethics Commission, or you can convene a meeting or a hearing to inquire. But instead, everybody is now on their worry. And I think that's the only thing we have going for ourselves in this state, is that they're worried about losing their easy jobs, their ability to walk in an office and everybody bow down and says, yeah, Senator, Representative, how are you? And here's a gift. This is the same group of people now that attempted to justify receiving gifts. And then they tell you, and they're worried now, quietly, why is Neil Abercrombie tanking? Well, look at the big picture. While it may be Neil Abercrombie as governor tanking and his numbers are rating low, what does that say in overall about our economy, about our state, and how is that going to impact us? That's what should be the first point and the first point of concern right there. But instead, we want to know about others. And, you know, the governor and others were actively involved in the Micronesian thing to talk about and wrote letters about the cost that it was going to cost, but he wouldn't disclose that he had sealed the deal in bringing millions to the state of Hawaii, which translates into jobs. But maybe because it was jobs for his friends, that may have been the reason he didn't want to announce it. Or maybe it was that oversight. And that... that is the problem. And I say that I enjoy all of you listening. While I won't pretend to be a professional journalist, but you and I will know better at the end of the day for whatever that information is going to be factual. I'm doing it for the purpose of making sure that we can walk our streets safely and the attention can be placed on the good things that this state brings, address the issues that are impacting people. I'm still saddened. The proclamation and the secrecy of that is troubling. I mean, really, it gets down into my soul and it rocks it. But I can't get over the fact that children can be taken in by this state government and die in their hands. And we treat it so casual. We have people saying, well, we can't disclose that. Now, I understand there's privacy and all of that. Don't get me wrong. But these are children. If we can't protect our children and we're willing to display that behavior publicly, and then in turn run behind the secrecy, and the legislators stand there, I mean, folks, they had hearings on cyber crimes that didn't exist. They had committees. Just absolutely crazy. Committees that formed and appointed themselves as these committee heads when the state didn't even recognize the committees. And they had hearings. We should have a hearing daily until someone's head is on the chopping block to fix the problems that these children have died in the hands of the state. Sounds like it's all over the place, but this is what is allowed, and this is what will take place in a climate where the legislators don't serve as a check and balance that they're supposed to. They get too chummy and they get too partisan, and they want to make sure that their party stays in. And when they avail themselves to the lobbyists opposed to the citizens, and when they try to emulate Wall Street, because as I've said many times on this show, when you call the city and you're calling customer services, if that's telling right there, folks, you got corporate thinking people that really don't have the ability or the capacity to sustain themselves in corporate world unless they've done a political favor and they get appointed like Hanneman. He can call himself the CEO now. But guess who is left with the ruins? You and I. So it is good that the paper is holding Abercrombie and giving the opportunity to chime in. And in today's paper, there is a red tape emergency, Abercrombie's stealth decree waiving land use law for military ordnance cleanup remains a point of dispute. Mr. Abercrombie, if you were to just embrace that you, the thought that you work for us, we voted for you, we are the people of the state, you said that you're going to bring your knowledge and your expertise to the tables that would better us all. That's not happening. And so I would submit that the next thing to do, if you don't start immediately to respecting people like myself, of my ilk or my standings or what have you, I'm a citizen. I have the same investment and interest in this government and the well-being of it as your friends who have $80 million in the bank or your friend that has a jet. Because your friends are not going to hold you accountable, but I will. They're going to see if you can help them with their account, and I'm going to hold you accountable. And those of you that listen and have shared with me this information, thank you, and you encourage me, and all I can say is that let's keep watching them because they deserve watching. If we don't, we're in trouble. So I'll see you next week, and thank you for joining me, and please send, if you can, a donation to Kahea, KAHEA.org, and I'm going to post their contact information. But thank all of you for listening. Aloha.
No diggity!
Yeah. You know what? I like the play. No diggity, no doubt. Play on, play it. Play on, play it. Yo, Dre, drop the verse.
It's going down, fade to black street. The homies got at me, collab creations. Bump like acne, no doubt. I put it down, never slouch. As long as my credit can vouch, that dog couldn't catch me. Hey, who could stop with Dre making moves, attracting honeys like a magnet, giving them orgasms with my mellow accent. Still moving this flavor with the homies Black Street and Teddy, the original rock shaker.
Down, good luck. Baby got him open all over town. Strictly, she don't play around. Cover much ground, got paid by the town. Getting paid is a forte. Each and every day, true play away. I can't get her out of my mind.
Wow.
I think about the girl all the time.
Wow.
East side to the west side. Put the fat drive in the most pride. She got tricks in the stash. Stacking up the cash. Fast when it comes to the gas. By no means half rags. On when she's got to have it. Baby, you're a perfect 10. I wanna get in. Can I get down? So I can. I like the way you work it.
No diggity.
I got to bag it up.
Bag it up.
I like the way you work it.
No diggity.
I got to bag it up.
Bag it up, girl.
I like the way you work it.
No diggity.
I got to bag it up.
Bag it up.
I like the way you work it.
No diggity.
I got to bag it up. She got class and style. She not as by the time.
Thanks for listening, and tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show on K108.